You have to be willing to go to places you didn't really, you never saw yourself. You don't really want to go, but that's where he needs us. And that's where we make the biggest difference, not only for the children, but in the lives of these families and certainly for people who are addicted, because, you know, their addictions lead them to places they shouldn't be.
Welcome to Intrinsically Motivated, where we have conversations with experts in the field of addiction, recovery, and those personally affected by it, as we seek to mobilize the church to replace addiction and mental health challenges with flourishing. On today's episode, we'll be talking with Uplift board member Dave Persinger. We'll be discussing how his experience in foster care has shaped him and his family's life. I'm Tucker Clements, audio engineer and editor for Uplift Appalachia, and this is Intrinsically Motivated.
My family moved to John City in 1995. I was in fourth grade. You were already at Heritage by then, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So how long have you been at Heritage? Like, how? What time? When did you first find your way into to Heritage?
Yeah. So we came in 1993.
Okay.
Becky and I were married in May, and I think we came to Heritage in September.
And did you grow up in the area?
I did. Grew up just on the outskirts of Johnson City, the south side of Johnson City. Almost, it was in Carter County.
Okay,
was still a Johnson City address. So,
yeah, yeah. So obviously, like I remember because we were talking about this right before we started recording. You were in a bunch of the skits in Vacation Bible School in my like formative years coming up through children's ministry at Heritage. You were a super spies like plucky sidekick. You were superhero type. So you've been involved in all kinds of different things in your ministry history, yeah?
Yeah. So, you know, we were raising kids in the church, and Becky and I, our goal was, if our kids are plugged in the ministry, you know, we should do our part. So we taught classes and we were instructional aides. And then with the VBS and the children's ministries, you know, at some point, one of the children's ministries directors just saw me goofing with the kids and go, you know, he's kind of funny. Maybe we can work that into, hey, he might be good in a skit.
Put him on stage.
Put him on stage and let him go.
And you didn't realize it was like a 3-year contract with an option for a fourth or anything like that. And you,
that's right.
You,
yeah.
You were sucked in and stuck there for a while after that.
I went from role to role to role and loved it. Loved every minute of it. And that's where it really, I mean, we had a relationship with your family. We knew, of course, Andy and Becky got to know each other in nursery, and then Dale and I in some different ministries. But when we got together around VBS and Teen Kids, or was it Kid Stuff?
Maybe Kid Stuff, yeah.
Yeah. When we came together for that, it was like, it was, you know, 2 or 3 times a week. We were rehearsing lines and working on video or audio.
And by that
equipment.
Point, I had aged up and I was acting too.
That's right, so we
were all working together on all that. But I love that you said, you know, my kids were in it and therefore I felt like,
yeah,
I'm just going to be as involved as I can. Is that something that you kind of figured out on your own, or is that something that you'd been kind of raised to feel that way? Or how did you kind of discover that desire to like really take that active role in ministry?
It would be in a way, our families, you know, my dad worked on the road a lot. He was an electrician, so I didn't get to spend a lot of time with my dad. And although I loved my dad, he was a wonderful dad. He made up for missed time when he was there. But there was something missing. And I, you know, Becky and I had talked about that, and it was one of those kind of silent vows you make. Well, we're going to be plugged into our kids' lives. And so we tried. I not only was it at the church, but I coached basketball teams and softball teams. I coached soccer, and I still don't know all the rules to soccer, and I don't know why they let me coach. But if my kids were in it, I wanted to be there. I wanted to see them grow and develop. And as a ministry leader at the church, I was always looking for those life opportunities where you could take a, you know, just even a skint knee on the soccer field and kind of say, you know, what God can do with this, how he can grow your character, you know,
right,
even something that minute.
Yeah. So did you grow up in the church or?
I did. Well, I grew up going to church sporadically.
Right.
And we were not as committed, and we were in I grew up in the Christian Church, Church of Christ.
Right.
So it was a very Armenian view of faith. And, you know, again, with my dad being out of town a lot, whenever my mom could, she would have us there. So we were in and out of different things. I didn't get really serious about my faith. I had a good friend in high school that used to, he was very Baptist and I was very Church of Christ, and we saw our differences, but then eventually, you know, I saw something in him that I didn't have, and it was that relationship with God, and eventually led to some conversations about salvation, and then we became good friends, and eventually, you know, after getting really serious about our faith, did a college Bible study together out of his apartment, which led to all kinds of things. So,
and you've been active ministry ever since. You've been kind of, yeah, you've been kind of all in everything. I know you were a trustee for a while, right? Then you were a deacon for a while. Now you're even an elder. You are my elder, one of my elders at the church now. Yeah. So you've obviously, and from acting on the stage to now coming up and giving announcements and stuff every now and then, and leading.
Now
and
I
that
have
sort
to do
thing.
The mature stuff.
It's, yeah, you don't get to wear like a mask and jump around on the stage and let us blow things up and stuff.
Not as nearly much. As fun, but still the opportunity to be
a different kind of valuable work, right? Yeah. Yeah. So I know, obviously, one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you is because a little over a year ago, you got onto the board of Uplift somewhere in the last year, year and a half, something like that. I don't remember my timelines. The time just keeps moving, and I can't keep up with how fast things are going. Because obviously, we'd been close with your family for a long time. You kind of understood what our ministry was like, but also, one of the areas that Uplift is hoping to get even more involved in has been foster ministry, and I know that that's been an important part of your life. Mm. Tell me a little bit about how you found your way into foster ministry, and then we can kind of talk a little bit about some of those long-term changes that happened in your life because of that involvement.
Yeah, so we have three biological kids, and after our third, we had some changes in our life, which... having more kids was just going to, it was just going to be a little difficult to the life plan at the time. And our older kids were teenagers by then, and they were plugged into sports and stuff. So we were a very busy family. But my wife, Becky, she, in her prayer time, she was always like saying things to the effect of, I don't think our family's complete. And, which used to make me really nervous because I thought starting over doesn't sound really easy to me, and because I'm getting older. But we kept praying about it, and then foster care kept coming up. And Becky, God brought some people into our lives that were foster parents, and she just had a definite conviction about it, which I didn't have at first. I continued to pray about it, and we kind of used this model for what ministries or different things we get into. Becky felt very strongly about it. I didn't. I was like, well, let's just take the next step. Let's go through the foster care training. And then after we did that, well, let's do the home study. Well, let's just put our big toe into it and maybe do some respite care, which is just taking kids that foster families that are established. If they need a vacation or a break or a weekend, then we do respite care. But through that process, God was giving me the same vision that he had given my wife, and that there's just this incredible need within our community for foster care parents that not only see the problem as, you know, here are these families that are going through these difficulties to the extent that the children, for their own safety and welfare, need to be removed. And that gets into trauma, hence my connection to Uplift in a way. And then that trauma, it's not only for the kids, but also the families. And so we kind of seen ourselves as, we don't want to be the foster care family that just looks for these ideal children that we can just make our own, but we want to minister to the children, love on them, and love on the families at the same time, and see if God can't use us as a unit of healing so that maybe we can help this family come back together.
Yeah. I mean, I know that's often the goal for any child that goes into foster care. You're trying to get family reunited, get mom and dad, whatever the situation may be, you know, back on their feet. That's always the goal. But I, you know, it's often you hear once people start foster care, they really, I mean, obviously you're going to get attached to these kids. You're going to love these kids. Yeah. And it seems like it's hard to maintain that mindset sometime of the ultimate goal is we're trying to help restore these families back together. But it sounds like you were really trying to actively, you know, keep that as a part of the, in the back of your mind as you're kind of going into that.
Yeah. Just because we were on the outside looking in for so long and we got to talk to so many foster parents, and a lot of the foster parents that we talked to were, I would say, very mature in their faith, and they were showing us, here's what we're doing, but here's the bigger problem. You know, I won't say it's easy because it's never easy, but the easy thing is bring these children in and just care for them. But the bigger problem is you have a broken family here, and our culture, our society, especially in our area, really need families who see this and want to see this unit come back together. Statistically speaking, it's still long term, it's better to a biological unit, a biological family, if they can stay intact, is better for the children. Now, and a lot of people disagree with that. They'll go, well, you know, if your kid's in an abusive home, you know, if someone's a one-time abuser, they're going to be that their whole life. I disagree with that. I've seen God just move and work in families and do this incredible change. But you got to be willing to work with them. And you did, you said something that was so profound, because when I talk to other people who are considering foster care or people who are dead set against it, but what they're curious about, why we got into it, they'll say that that one statement comes up. They'll say, well, I could never do that because I get so attached to the children, I couldn't let them go. And I actually said that at one time. And as I've gone through the process for the last 12 to 15 years, I think, you know, God's convicted my heart in that he wants me to look at the bigger picture and say, you know, it's easy to, if you're saying that, then your focus is really on your heart and your feelings and how you'd get hurt. But what about the children?
Right.
They still need this family to come alongside and love on them.
And that's a beautiful picture of restoration. It's a beautiful picture of what, like you said, like what God can do in people's lives. How many kids have you had come through your home?
I think, and I should know this because any child that comes through our home, Becky gets a picture and puts it in a frame, and we have it on a hallway wall. So at last count, I think it was 19 or 20 now. And that is children who have been in our home for, we had temporary custody of some, we've had respite cases that were just so familiar with us that they keep coming back and back. Some long-term care. We've had a few kids for, I think one child stayed with us 2 to 3 years before.
So it's kind of the full gambit, the full spectrum.
The full spectrum.
It could be quick, but all of them were important, and you were able to kind of play some sort of important role in their lives for however long it was that God was going to have them in your house.
Yeah, and each child was different. Each child brought their own problems. They brought their own, they added to our family in a way that sometimes surprised us in very unique ways. And it's been a blessing. It is a hard thing. It's not, right. I never look at people who are contemplating that and go, oh, you can do this. It's so easy. It's not.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things that, I mean, in a lot of our uplift trainings that we talk about is like, we use the same phrase, it's hard, but it's worth it.
Right.
In sort of a, we don't want to sugarcoat the kind of work that we're trying to encourage churches and church people to get into because we don't want to paint some sort of, you know, inaccurate picture. Because then as soon as you step in and something gets challenging, you're like, whoa, you tricked me into this. And that's not what we want. We want to say, it's going to be challenging. It's going to come with, you know, hard, different things. But there is going to be value in that.
Yeah.
And you're going to learn a lot. You're going to learn a lot about yourself. You're going to learn a lot about, you know, God's goodness to you and his kindness to maybe sometimes help you develop a patience that you didn't know you had. Or just kind of that joy of seeing some families be able to be reunited or, you know, that sort of thing as well.
Yeah. And we've seen all of that. One of the teenagers that stayed with us for 2 to 3 years, that young lady is reunited with her birth mom, and their family's doing really well. It was, if you would have saw where the family was at the beginning of the process, you know, you would have said, I'd bet everything I had they wouldn't, they're never going to make it. You know, they'll never get their kids back. And, you know, through a lot of prayer and loving care and people coming alongside the biological family. My wife often says, you know, we're not only fostering the children, but we're fostering this family. There are moms out there who, you know, because foster care is this cyclical thing, it just it goes from one generation to the next. These problems where dads don't learn how to be dads and moms don't really know how to be moms, you know, they need someone to come alongside and lovingly say, "You can do this. You can do this." And let me show you what someone showed me. Right. Let me love you through this problem, or just offer some gentle advice. And it, you know, sometimes you cross lines and you offend, but that's part of the process. You yeah. know?
So how I guess open is the system to letting you also be able to minister to the families at the same time? Are there limitations in the way that you can minister to the family? Or because yeah. I know sometimes it's like these kids can't be around their parents. Sometimes it's they can limitedly be around their parents. How is it that you're able to kind of navigate and, like you said, foster the families at the same time? You're fostering
those kids.
That's
a great question, and that's changed a lot over the last 7 to 10 years, I would say. DCS, which is the primary organization in East Tennessee, there are a lot of therapeutic agencies that take more difficult children who are in a level 2 or level 3 because of emotional problems or physical problems. But DCS, if a child's taken out and the family is giving a a course to get that child back, they'll have to take some anger management courses or nutrition or family planning courses, things like that, so that they can prove they're growing in their responsibility.
They're taking the steps that they need to improve on the situation they were in before.
Yeah, they're building that confidence in themselves and a nucleus in their family that says to the state, hey, we can care for these kids. So while that process is going on, DCS has been very, and these other agencies have been very encouraging, more so in the last, like I said, 7 years, to have a lot of discourse with biological moms. There are times when we're told, really wouldn't be a good idea to have these conversations. But when it's open, you know, we try to take advantage of that. We will, we send pictures. My wife likes to do this thing of, when a child comes into our house, you know, he or she's getting acclimated to how we do family life. And Becky takes a lot of pictures. She will take pictures. She will make books of these kids as they go to school, as they go to summer camp, as they get involved in soccer teams, and letting the birth parents see them advance. Now, you would think, well, this probably will work negatively. These parents
see, but at the same time, they're also seeing their kid is still having these experiences, and they're still feeling like they're going to know what their kid's been involved in.
The majority of the time, that has been a very positive effect for us, that we've noticed that most families really appreciate that, and they know their children are in a home where they're being cared for and loved on, and they still, if they're working through their plan, they know, hopefully I'm going to get this child back, and because of the work of this other family, maybe we can advance through some of the trauma of the past.
Yeah.
So,
and I know it's kind of a full-time job to help raise somebody's kids and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to also minister to families at the same time, which is why I think that kind of goes hand in hand with what we're trying to do with addiction and recovery and stuff here at Double. It's like, this would be a great place for, as part of the church or helping to care for these kids, maybe even if communication isn't a good idea at the time, other portions of people in the church that maybe are a little bit more burdened for some of these families can kind of step in and help minister to the families at the same time. And that way we're not, you know, burning out one family trying to minister to their kids and the family all at the same time. And that sort of thing might be an amazing opportunity for the church to kind of step in a different way.
Yeah, that's kind of this idea of when I got involved with Uplift, I seen you guys, you know, making advances in an area that not a lot of ministries were getting involved in. You know, you were taking addiction head on. You were bringing people into the church that you knew were struggling with addiction. You were counseling with them. You were going out on the streets and having conversation. And that's the one part. And then here's these families who have these children. And we were coming in on this side of it. And I thought, it's amazing how God is connecting all these different people who are at different sides of the same problem. And some, and you know, maybe attacking it in different ways or using their skills or insight into where they are just to see the gospel just kind of come into these people's lives and start giving them hope.
Yeah. And I love that you talk about seeing it from the different, the same problem from different angles, mm-hmm. because I mean, it's not surprising that with the need for a lot of foster care ministry, also there's usually a connection to addiction in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. And so, and you already talked about how there's kind of this spiral of generational problems that kind of continue. And the same thing happens with addiction where, you know, the trauma of not having mom or dad in the house or whatever, for whatever reason, leads to more trauma in the children's life, which leads to, you know, a higher probability, not saying it's always going to happen, but there's a higher chance that they fall into similar patterns as the generation that came before them. And so if we can kind of interrupt that pattern as the church by serving these kids and serving their families all at the same time, I mean, it just seems like such an amazing opportunity that we should cherish the opportunity to kind of take advantage of.
Yeah. That mindset that you just kind of talked about right there, that introduced, is what I think has been lacking in the church for a while. I heard one guy used to say, ministry's messy. And it is. It's messy. When you get involved with addiction, it gets really messy. you know, you get involved in things and are led to places where you're like, would Jesus really go here? And then you sit there and you think about it. Absolutely, he would. In fact, yeah. He would hang out here. This is where he needs to be, where he'd want to be. And if that's where he would be, then that's where the church
should be. That's where we ought to go. Absolutely. That's where we ought to go. Yeah.
But it puts us in places where, I'll give you just a little story about years ago through my work with a local communications company. I was involved in some of the local festivals, Emoji Festival, the Blue Plum in particular. Blue Plum is this festival. It's downtown. It's three blocks wide, and there's a lot of, you know, I set up a Wi-Fi network for people to use it, but then and had to stay down there through the whole weekend, a 3-day weekend. But on one side of the city, there are live bands and the bars are open. There's a lot of alcohol and just it gets into kind of a frenzied, crazy atmosphere. On the other side of the street, there's a church up on West Market, and they're doing family friendly games and families coming together and enjoying food. And one of my friends that I'd known from church for years, I'm down there talking to him, and he's involved in the organization that brought the Blue Plum there. And I'm talking in and I'm just telling him, man, I want to hang out down here with these families and these kids. You know, I'm trying to stay away from that side of the city over there because it's just kind of crazy. And he looked at me and he said, well, Dave, you know, I know you like it over here, but I think maybe the Lord would rather you be on that side of town. Maybe he could use you. There's a conversation that needs to be had or someone that needs to be helped. And I was like, yeah, I don't really like you for pointing that out to me. Yeah.
But. And that's kind of a scary thought sometimes. Like we're being asked to put ourselves in kind of uncomfortable situations sometimes. I mean, and like you, and I would imagine that foster care is, like you said it earlier, it's often going to be kind of uncomfortable, and you're going to be put in challenging situations and responding to maybe a particular behavior or outburst or cry out that you weren't expecting or you hadn't experienced in that exact way before. And there's going to be lots of times where you're kind of learning on the fly, but you know that that's still where God would want you to be.
Yeah.
And that the willingness to be able to do that is something that I think he grows in us over time. I think he kind of gets our attention mm-hmm. through, like, we see the big problem, you know, right. how many children are, you know, in the DCS system right now. And we see these big numbers, and it's like, I mean, I talk all the time when I'm talking about, you know, the ministry of Uplift, I throw out big numbers, you know, 100,000 overdose deaths per year in our nation, like over 2,000 overdose deaths in our region, and there are 2,300 churches in our region. And, you know, I say things like that. It's like, and it's that same thing. It's like some big number might get our attention, but over time, God really shapes our heart to actually want to put ourselves in these uncomfortable situations just because we can't help it. It's just like, this is what God has called us to.
And yeah.
Yeah. Have to go.
It gets difficult. I don't know of any foster family at some point in the journey has been dealing with a difficult child, maybe a child that needs, you know, we've had children that have three or four either therapy or medical or so many appointments in a week, and you're driving here and you're driving there, and sometimes you think you're making this incredible headway, and then they just take this turn the other way, and you sit there and question, why am I doing this? And why did I even get involved? And are we really helping this child? And those questions, because that's human. When you get into the difficulty of it and the challenge of it, and it weighs on you. But like you said, you know, God uses those points in our life to remind us of why we're there. And the church absolutely has to be involved in this. And I see God doing this thing in the last so many years of my life where he's pushing people a little bit further. You have to kind of cross lines into people's space to, if you're really going to make a difference. You have to ask those uncomfortable questions. You have to be willing to go to places you never saw yourself. You don't really want to go. But that's where he needs us. And that's where we make the biggest difference. Not only for the children, but in the lives of these families, and certainly for people who are addicted, because you know their addictions lead them to places they shouldn't be,
and they're not going to come out apart from the work of the Holy Spirit through exactly. the church as it's being sent out by the power of God. You know, let's go get them. So I have two questions. After all these years of experience with foster care, how did that experience affect your biological kids? How did that affect them? How did that change them over time?
Yeah. So there was a pretty good gap in our first two children and then our third children. My two older girls were in their mid-teens when we started fostering, or teens, and they were just gung-ho about it. Our son was years younger, and you know, he was all for it at first, you know, and then as children started coming to our home, you know, and he started seeing the difficulties they were having, you know, there were times when he was kind of, wait a minute, maybe we should rethink this. You mean I have to share my toys? I have to share right. my yeah. mom and dad? I mean, this kid needs hugs all the time. What about my hugs? And so it presented some interesting problems, but problems, some of them we kind of, you know, anticipated, but a lot of them we didn't, and yet it still gave us opportunity to have those gospel conversations with them. And I think, you know, Becky and I talk about this all the time, that we see God not only maturing them in their faith, but giving them opportunities to setting them up for service later on. They're seeing things at a young age that a lot of foster parents don't even get into until later on. Not to say that my children will foster, they may, but as of right now, so my oldest daughter helps out a lot with not only our foster kids, but other families' foster kids. My younger daughter, it helped her choose a career. So she's in social work now. And she's actually our primary foster care agent. We deal with her all the time in which kids come to our house and what's going on. And she said, had God not led us to do what we did, she wouldn't have chosen that path, or may not have. And she is, because she will tell you that because of what she saw in our house, it not only pointed her in that direction, but saw what an instrument of change she could be. And the one thing she likes to say a lot, and it touches me, is that she said, sometimes we look at a situation and we address it as, well, I don't have the personality, I don't have the character, I don't have the heart to do these things. And she said, so if you're coming along and you see that, a heart that's willing to love, especially people who are hard to love, is the first obstacle. If you get by that, if you let God show you that if you give that heart to Him, He can mold it and flex it into ways that can love, and it's hard to imagine what He can accomplish right with that. So, yeah, that kind of just pushed us that way, and it's still leading that way. I think all of our children could look back at a point and go, "Whoo, that was a tough year," or "That was a tough right summer," but they would also tell you, "We're so glad that we were a part of that family's life," or "We're so glad that God allowed us to deal with that because it's brought us to this point."
Yeah, and I think it's kind of cool just talking about how all that has kind of pushed one of your daughters into this kind of work specifically. Kind of seems kind of like a culmination of what we were talking about at the very beginning, getting involved in children's ministry, teaching classes, being up on stage, like kind of, we want to be as involved because we want to show our kids where we want them to be. Right. And then just ministry's naturally happening through your lives. And now all of a sudden ministry's coming out of them after just kind of following that example, which is a beautiful way that the church ought to work. And I think that's really cool to see, which is why it's so important that we do as much work as we can to kind of keep these other families working toward that same kind of wholeness, fullness, flourishing, so that that can happen in their children's lives as well. And that's what that's the ultimate goal, is to see that happening in the lives of all these families, all these families as well.
It's a good point. If you, we talk about, raising our own children, when it's raising biological children and you're wanting to model Christianity and you want to model this, and you want to disciple them, you get to so many places in your life where you're like, are my kids getting this? Am I teaching it correctly? Do I communicate these values in a way that they understand it so they'll apply it? And sometimes through different situations, God just brings a situation into your life that allows you can, just by enduring it, by plugging yourself in, loving people through a tough situation, or just showing that you're trusting the Lord. You may not have all the answers. You don't exactly know which way to go, but you're just going to keep pushing forward because you know God has called you to this. He's going to give you the grace to endure it, to get through it, and to come out better on the other side. And for your children to see that you're modeling your faith, you're living out your faith, even in the toughest situations, I think speaks volumes to them about what it means to be a Christian. Because sometimes it's just hard to put into words exactly what that means,
Yeah, because like you said, you don't know necessarily what's coming next. You don't know what that next placement's going to be like, or you don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah.
I do want to ask you one more question kind of on this thing, because you've said it several times, our three biological children. Because there's an interesting culmination to your whole experience in foster care. Yeah. You want to tell a little bit about that?
Yeah. So Becky and I got into fostering, and we would tell people a lot, we are a foster family. We're not an adoptive family. We look to be the temporary junction between what these kids need now and where they'll end up later.
Just like you were going to be a respite care family at the very beginning.
Exactly. Yeah. Just like that.
I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah. We have our plans and God has His plans. And sometimes he laughs when we talk about how we know where this is going to go. But right after COVID, we had actually closed our home during a portion of COVID because one of our children, has some immune system issues, and we were told by their doctor, it's not a good idea to bring these children in, and you may expose him or her to whatever's going on. So we temporarily closed, and because COVID was so devastating to families, it was forcing these families who were struggling with abuse and neglect and all these other things to be in this small area together, and it just, the numbers of kids that were coming into foster care during that time was just astronomical. So even though we'd closed our home for a short period of time, we were getting calls, on the daily. Are you sure about that? Because we just had a sibling group of four and a sibling group of six and this child over here. And, at one point my wife's like, I know this is what we said, but maybe we can trust God to take care of that situation. And I said, well, let me pray about it. And we begin to pray about it. And then we decide, okay, maybe we can, let's just see what happens. And the very morning I said, okay, maybe we could take one. I don't think it was an hour. And my wife's calling me saying, oh yeah, they've called. And I said, yes. I'm like, you said yes? And shouldn't we talk about, nope, I'm on the way to get the kid. It just happened to be a 3-month-old baby that she was taken from her mom at birth. And here's where I make the connection with Uplift a lot is the mom was addicted throughout pregnancy. And so this 3-month-old baby was suffering NAS symptoms, yeah. neonatal abstinence
yep. syndrome. Which is a huge portion of the population huge. In our area.
Yep. And so, you know, we took this child in and we're working with this beautiful little girl and she's, you know, she's suffering a lot of the symptoms that NAS babies deal with. And we were working through it. And, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, this is tough, but it's temporary, you know. And the social worker that we initially worked with at the time, which was not my daughter at the time, this social worker was like, oh, this family's doing so good. And this child will be back with this family 2 months. We just need you to do this 2 months. 2 months turned into 6 months, turned into a year, turned into a year and a half. And about the year and a half, 2 year mark, we were like, I don't think this family's, you know, they made some strides and then they had a lot of difficulty where it just got to the point, we realized they weren't going to be able to get it together to get their child back. And so it brought to us, are we ready to adopt this child? Because at this point, you know, at 2 years, usually a little sooner, but between 2 and 2.5 years, DCS is starting to say, we have to look for permanency for this child. We know you're a foster care family. If you're not interested, please let us know so we can start seeking other families. And, you know, obviously in 2.5 years, we had developed an incredible bond with this child. Our main concerns were we were getting older. You know, our oldest child at the time was 26 or 27. And we were about to take a child who was 2.5 years old. So it is literally starting all over.
I was going to say, you had already said, we didn't want to start over anymore.
Again. I say what I think, and God laughs and goes, oh, I got different plans.
Let's try this instead.
How about this?
Yeah.
Maybe you're not as old as you think you are. But, you know, the opportunity was there, and we were just like, you know, this is where God has brought us. And yeah, there's some difficulties ahead. There's some things that we didn't plan on, but this is what it means to, this is what it means to involve yourself in this. And this is what it means. This is what God's doing. And so when you become a Christian and you say, you know, hey God, I'm surrendering my life to you. You say that thinking,
do you really mean all in?
Yes. You may think, well, I'll surrender, you know, chicken nuggets on Wednesdays and Fridays because that's bad for my health, or
right.
Or maybe I'll give more time to the church to teach or whatever. Sometimes God may, you may be fostering a child you didn't.
And how about we just raise this kid for the rest of their life, you know?
Yeah. How about we have another kid? It's not necessarily biological, but it's... It's an incredible journey of how God changes you while he's ministering to these children. He's maturing us in our faith, molding us, pushing us in areas where we never thought we would be, and bringing something beautiful out of it. It's the brokenness of where you started, and then taking the brokenness of a family and kind of meshing that into what he's building. You know, he's building his church. He's building this gospel formation within the hearts of his children. And it's a beautiful thing to see. It's a tough thing. And, you know, it's sometimes I'm still looking back going, was that me or was that God? Well, it was God, but...
But man.
Yeah, yeah.
He's taking us for a ride.
He is taking us for a ride. So, yeah, now we have 4 children And, you know, I'm not the guy that says, oh, we'll never do that again.
You've learned your lesson on that?
Yeah, I have learned my lesson. There are a lot of things I won't say. And Becky and I still talk about, you know, what's God's plan for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And
so is your home still open for adoption, even, or not for adoption, for foster even after that? Have y'all continued to foster even in that?
Yes, we have. We don't have a placement right now. We're doing a lot of respite. Because our new daughter she does have some challenges.
Right.
It puts us in a place where we don't want to get in over our heads.
Right.
And be able to deal or care for her in the way that she needs it. But at the same time, we've done respite care for other foster families in our church. We did that last weekend.
Right.
We do that a lot. We're open to temporary placements. And, you know, Becky's even, you know, she puts these little thoughts in my head and things that to put on my prayer list. And she's like, you know, our daughter is, 4 and a half, she's going to be going to school pretty soon. Might even be easier if we had another 5-year-old about her age and they could entertain each other. Exactly. This is my wife.
You pray about that.
Yeah. My wife is subtle. God's not as subtle.
Right.
But yeah, Becky has a way of kind of putting these ideas. And at this point, I have to say this. You know, I've met a lot of amazing people within the foster care community. None of them top my wife. God gave my wife a heart. I say to love others wherever they are. It's easy to love people who are like us, and it's easy to love people through certain situations. To love people where they are in the ugly situations of life, she has a spiritual gift for that. And not only that, but her desire to make whole those things which are broken it has inspired me in ways that I never saw in her, you know, with just our biological family. It took God putting us in a place for me to see that. And I sing her praises everywhere for that.
Yeah, and she'll listen to this and she'll know that you shouted her out and she'll be very, very happy.
Yeah.
You talked about doing respite care for lots of folks at our church. I say our church because, like I said, you're one of my elders too.
That's right.
And since you have come on as an elder, our church, Heritage Baptist Church here in Johnson City, has really gone all in on the idea for foster care ministry. Mm-hmm. How has that emphasis in our church really played out? And because I know you're in the meetings with the other elders, and different elders are more involved in different areas of different things. But obviously, this is an area that you're passionate about, so obviously right. You're gonna be involved in that. What does that look like in one local church, and how's that kind of played out?
Yeah, so it's been interesting to see how, as our church is strategically located, I say, within Johnson City, you know, we're a block away from the business district and we're a block away from government housing. It's that close. And so there's this dichotomy of culture all around us and different needs, spiritual needs of people in different areas. But one of the biggest needs, and our church is seeing that, and the leadership of our church sees the brokenness of families, certainly how drug addiction and alcohol and chemical dependency within our culture has just wrecked lives and families, and the church has to be involved. So we have our programs where we're trying to advance the gospel in those areas. How can the gospel make a difference in these groups, in these areas, in these individuals? And along with that has come this, the foster care crisis is what I would call it. How the numbers boomed through COVID and coming out of COVID, and it's just presented so many ministry opportunities. And I'm so thankful for the leadership of our church who see these opportunities and go, this is a difficult ministry, but one that we have to be involved in. And a lot of times at Heritage, we're on the forefront of these things. We're doing things that other churches are catching up to. Now, not always. I'm not trying to say our church is the best. We're always on.
It's okay that you like your church.
All right, thank you. I'm glad glad I can throw that in there. But one of the reasons I love being at Heritage is because we do have leadership, people with such a heart for ministry that they're like, you know, the village fostering ministry that we have. We're calling people. We're looking at our church and saying, you know what? These children have these incredible needs. These families have needs. We want to be on the forefront of meeting those needs. And maybe you're not called to foster care, but if you're not, you can be supporting these families that are called to it. You can come alongside and provide a meal. You can give them a night out. You can do some repair work around their house because they're off taking kids to therapy appointments and stuff. And so everyone can be involved. You just have to find your place. And that's one thing I love about our church. I love about the Village Fostering Ministry, which a couple of our elders are kind of heading up. And like I said, we've been involved in this, and we've been involved in the living room where we were bringing DCS kids into the church and allowing them to live there, because when agencies can't find homes for them, temporary housing at foster care homes, a lot of these kids were sleeping in offices around town. And I mean, that's been a subject in the newspaper. And so, you know, our church opened our doors and said, let's bring them here, let them live here. We've got a kitchen, we've got showers, we've got bathrooms, we've got everything they need, and we got involved with that, and a lot of problems came with it, but we worked through those, and we're still working through a lot of issues and still seeing exactly how God is calling us. But I love that our church is not shying away from it. We're not letting the difficulty push us away from that and choosing easy ministry is what I would say at times. Yeah.
And the thing that I love about the Village Foster Ministry at Heritage specifically, because as soon as a couple of the elders started presenting it, I was like, you know what's awesome about this? This is almost exactly what we at Uplift have been talking about for 4 or 5 years. And it's like, I love hearing churches kind of start to figure it out on their own. I say that kind of in air quotes, because I know that one of those elders I'd been talking to about a lot of Uplift stuff for a while. So I don't care that he, you know, took it and ran with it. I'm just happy that that ministry is happening, because now it kind of shows the church we're all in on this, even if we're not all actively doing this.
Right.
You know, and that's one of the things that we've talked about in a lot of our training opportunities, or, you know, we try to do lots of transportation stuff here at Uplift. And one of the things that we say is, as you're building relationships with people and you're bringing them back into the church, not everybody is going to be doing the writing or doing the foster care ministry or ministering to the families. But if those people end up building relationships with members of the church and they end up back in the church, all of us need to know how to minister to people really effectively. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's where we're really excited about, you know, like you said, being able to really wrap around people within the church and the people that we're trying to minister to, and the whole church kind of being all in and connected to that ministry at the same time, because it's so easy to just be a part of a church.
Right. Yeah.
But it's a different thing to think, even if I'm not the one actively helping raise that child, you know, I still have a really active role to play in the life of the church. I'm not just here to receive something. I actually am giving something just by my being a member of this church. And I need to, you know, weigh the weight, feel the weight of that call, that no matter what my specific application to this kind of ministry is, I still have some role to play, and I need to be confident that God's going to use me, even if I'm afraid of what that might mean or what it might look like, or even if I've said, oh, I'm already done with that kind of ministry. I've already done that. I'm not starting over again. But we all have some kind of role to play, and it's exciting to see Heritage and other churches that are starting to kind of catch this same vision, really starting to see there is more that we should and ought to be doing, and that we can do, and that kind of effective ministry is not as far away as we sometimes think.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I heard one of our church members who didn't want to foster but got involved in foster care ministry or the Village Fostering Ministry, and they're helping out in different ways. They put it so succinctly. They said, you know, looking at the brokenness of these families and these children made me aware that we're all broken in some way. She said it like, you know, maybe my brokenness, what's wrong with me, what I struggle with, what the difficulty in my life is not the brokenness that's going to get plastered all over the 5 o'clock news. It doesn't come out in that way. And I'm good at hiding it. I can dress it up on Sundays. I can hide behind this or that. But when you, she said, when you get involved with other people and then you start thinking, you know, God's ministering to all of us in our brokenness. And when I'm helping someone else, when I'm just being that instrument of grace that God happens to be using for this child, just to even, you know, babysit this child, just to sit and read books with a child who's come from a broken family, it, God is healing my brokenness as he's healing their brokenness. And it's life-changing. I think that's the word she said. It's life-changing. And it took a group of people who would just push into an area where nobody else wants to go, because it's just ugly sometimes. It's difficult, it's hard, it'll ask more of you than you're often willing to give, but somebody has to go there first. And that's back to, you know, kind of bragging on my church. I love that we pioneer into areas where others haven't gone yet. And I think in the years to come, as we look at the culture and we look at what's going on and we're seeing things, I just think as ugly as things look on this side, the gospel is greater. God is greater than that. We just have to be willing to take the gospel to places we haven't taken it before.
Yeah, and that's why we believe the church is uniquely equipped to be the answer to all of these problems, whether it's the foster care crisis or the addiction crisis or all these different mental health challenges that people have, all of the this epidemic of loneliness that we had coming out of COVID. Like, all of these things the church has the answers for,
right?
And that's why we like to just lean into what we already believe as the church and say, the rest of the world's just kind of catching up to what we've known all along, that God created us to live a certain way, and he created us to live together in a certain way and have community in a certain way. And honestly, ultimately to be found in him like that. And we know that that's the answer. And if we can just actually take an active role in making that a part of the culture that we live in,
right,
that's going to be a huge change and really super.
Yeah,
and it's exciting to me to see what God's already doing in small pockets around the country in our area, or right, you know, and then even just little pockets in our church that slowly has begun to grow and kind of breed itself into, you know, this movement within a whole church and hopefully soon within a whole area. And that's what we're really excited to see. Yep. And just, you know, hearing kind of how that started, like just hearing your story again, how it started with, I just want to minister so that I can show my kids what that can look like to be active in ministry, and seeing now they're taking their faith seriously and they're actively ministering in meaningful ways that are kind of following. And you can kind of see, if we can help train new families to be that way, just the massive impact that the church can have, and not because of anything individually that we're doing, but just because the Holy Spirit's enabled us and given us these marching orders, and he's going to empower us and he's going to help us find the victory in all these things. And that to me is the most exciting thing. Just how big this thing can become if we just obediently follow him where he's already leading us, even if he's sometimes dragging us there kicking and screaming because it's going to be hard, or because we think that's not for me or whatever it is.
Right.
You know, sometimes he just slowly has to work on our hearts and soften us, and then we'll see, you know, these big things that he's going to do in our lives.
Yep.
And so
true. A lot of truth.
It's really exciting. So, well, Dave, thank you so much for sitting down and talking with us. I love hearing people's stories and then just hearing how all of these things are just a huge testimony to the way that God is faithful to answer prayer and to nudge us in directions that we didn't expect, but then to reveal himself to just be so kind and good to us along the way as he's doing it.
Yeah. So. Well, it's been great to be here. Thank you for inviting me and allowing me to talk about something that I am passionate about. So,
yeah. And like I said at the beginning, Uplift really wants to get involved in helping churches be equipped to effectively, you know, run foster care ministries, understanding trauma, understanding the things that are happening. So all of these things so tie so perfectly together. So I'm really excited to see how he's going to take us and where he's going to take us next.
Yep. Me too. It's good to be, as God is putting these things together, uplift through, I'll go back to your days of CRC, because Uplift was kind of born out of that.
Yep.
I mean, it was around it. When you all were pioneering with CRC down here in the inner city, you know, the inroads that you were making has just been built on in a way that God's just kind of kept Heritage connected to that through our friendships, our relationships. Yep. And it is amazing. God's not in a hurry about anything, but he gets things done in his time. So.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to see what he's going to do next.
Me too.
This has been a podcast powered by Uplift Appalachia. To learn more, you can find us at upliftappalachia.org.